I'm going to call the meeting to order. First, do we need a roll call? Roll call, okay.
Francois Avila.
Here.
Olivia Branch.
Here.
Andrea Copeland. Russ Kronberg.
Here.
Athena Eastwood.
Here.
Chris Engel.
Here.
Emily Gilroy.
Here.
Bea Lapicio Curtis.
Here.
Jennifer Lyons.
Here.
Jit Palakoma.
Here.
Danny Shea.
Here.
Amber Smith. Brad Jewell.
Here.
Juan Diego Wade. Darcy Mead.
Here.
That is the roll.
Thank you very much. Okay, first order, we have an industry presentation from Chris White from the Charlottesville Albemarle Airport Authority.
All right.
This is exciting.
I hope it is.
See if they'll cooperate. Or did the TV go to sleep?
He's not asleep. That's the recording device.
Hopefully it didn't go to sleep.
Thank you and welcome, Chris.
It did. Let's see. Well.
Just give it a second.
I think you may have turned it off.
There
we go.
Okay, do I need, I guess I need to reestablish it.
It might just be the HDMI, too. Hold on.
No, it's not HDMI.
Oh, it's not
HDMI. We had it wireless.
Okay. Then, yeah, you do. Sorry.
Do you want me to grab your little cart?
Yeah. Thank you.
Oops. Well, that's why I came early. Make sure this worked. I can go HDMI if that'll be faster, you think?
It's okay. Do you want me to do it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, we just have to click to touch screen.
Yeah, so I think we're good enough. And then if you want to put it on there, you're welcome to.
Okay. There we go.
It's not Albemarle County.
We're good.
No, it's not Albemarle County.
All right. Hello, everybody. Those of you who don't know me, I'm Chris White. I've been here about almost 2 years now, and I'm the Chief Operating Officer for the airport, also the Chief Marketing Officer, Chief Development Officer. People ask me what I do, and I say I count people and wash windows. So I do a little bit of everything. So a little bit about the airport team. Many of you know Jason. He's the CEO of the airport. And then Penny Shiflett is our Chief Financial Officer, and there's this bald guy. But really, we're about the whole team. The airport's very important to us. A little bit about the history of aviation in Charlottesville. Anyone go out to Foxfield this weekend? Well, Woodfield is Foxfield. So, you know, the hangar out there is over 100 years old. It was one of the original hangars, or close to 100 years old. And then UVA opened its own airport. It's still... many of the facilities are still there, and they still do a little bit of aeronautical stuff down there. So, but they operate a flight school and all sorts of other cool things the university did way back in the 70s. And then the airport, this airport, the current airport, opened in 1955. And you see the terminal building, the DC-4 there, and that terminal, that building still is at the airport. It's currently a fire station. Don't know how much longer it's going to be there, but it's there. And then in 1991, they built a new terminal, which is what everyone sees today. Really stylish, good color selection back then. So the airport right now has 5 destinations, and we have three network carriers, the main carriers. Connections that we have are 2 hubs that will get you anywhere you want to go. There's pretty much nowhere you can't go from Atlanta or Charlotte or Chicago, D.C. So this is where people go. LaGuardia is our top destination. Over 40,000 people a year. Interesting thing is, there's 155,000 trips per year between here and New York. So just do the math, you can see how many go by air, and there's a lot of people who go by. So if you go by rail, a lot of people go by car. I wouldn't drive to New York. I don't know what people do. But you can see these are final destinations. So you see we have a lot of demand to Boston and Charlotte. And these are people that actually flew through Joe. So those of you may not know, the airport is we're a governmental entity. We're an authority, and we're operated by the airport authority. And its leadership was established in 1984. The city and the county said, we don't want to manage the money and all the headaches that come with an airport, so we'll create an airport authority. And that's what was created back then. And so we have two things. We have an advisory board. Here's one of our members right here. And then we also have an airport authority. The airport authority board is made up of three members. You have the county administrator, the city manager, and a member of the joint board. And right now that's Pace. Pace Lockley, everyone knows Pace. So last calendar year, we served 699,000 passengers, almost 700,000. It's a pretty good number. And we draw passengers from 10 county area. So we don't just serve one city, we don't serve just one county, we serve an entire region. We get a lot of people, almost 100,000 people come over the mountain per year to come and use the airport. So.
Chris, do you mind letting Amber pass? Thanks.
Whoops.
Thank you. My bad.
So you can see our passengers are growing. You mentioned something about the economics. You can see we've been growing double digits since the pandemic. We took a huge hit in the pandemic. But we are almost back to where we were in 2019. Part of that has to do with how much capacity we have. We don't control that. We'll talk a little bit about what we do and what we don't do here in a minute. But a lot of it has to do with what the airlines will give us in terms of capacity. So last year we grew 15%, the prior year 17%, and so forth. We're on pace to do that again this year, provided we have the capacity. We grew 18% last month, year over year, so that's showing good growth.
Yeah.
So one thing that I want to do is reframe how you think about the airport. Well, first of all, we don't fly airplanes. I am a pilot, but we don't fly airplanes. We don't sell tickets. We don't sell hot dogs. We don't even sell gas. Those are all done by business partners. Think of the airport much like a successful mall operator. We own a facility, and we provide a place for other businesses to offer services to the general public and to other aviation businesses, like the airlines. So we lease space to Delta, so Delta can fly airplanes and move people and so forth. But we have to develop the facilities. We have to provide certain services like public safety. We're like a city in the fact that we have a police and a fire department. We do development. We do economic development, do things like that, many roles like that. But airports are the gateway of the community. We view the airport as the front door of the community. It's really representative of how we, in this room, think of our community. This is the first impression and the last impression a lot of visitors get. We're also economic developers. A big role of what we do enables businesses, whether it's the folks at DIA or UVA or tourism or anyone else to do their business, we help enable that and help it grow. We connect businesses to the broader market. So that's how we facilitate businesses. Of course, tourism, we help grow tourism. People could drive in, but there's a limited market. We want that market to be much broader. We want people from out of this country and all over this country to come into our community. People who fly in, stay longer and spend more money. So we like those folks. But the core of everything we do is about creating jobs. That's what the core of the airport's role is. So think of the airport as creating jobs. So what is the economic impact? This study was done in 2017. That's a new one in progress. The important thing is, we believe this number is closer to $1 billion now. The annual economic output of the airport, close to $1 billion. So, tied in with this is somewhere between $20 and $30 million a year in taxes that airport activities generate. That's a lot of money. So, maybe you could say that the airport builds schools, builds roads, things like that. So, I mentioned that we're like a mall operator, so who takes care of our customers, passengers, guests? Of course, the three main airlines. Tailwinds is our concessionaire. They do the food and beverage in the terminal building. Signature Aviation does all the general aviation. We average 360 operations per day. Maybe 50 of those are commercial. So over 300 general aviation operations. These are not small planes. 2 weeks ago, we had 6 Global Expresses sitting on the airport. They range from $30 to $80 million a piece, plus another 24 other smaller jets. So there's a lot of money that flows through the airport and comes through there, uses the facilities. Signature provides the front door to them. If you haven't been in their facility, I encourage you to go over and visit it. It's very nice for what it is. It's very nice. So, a lot of people say, well, when's the airport going to get another destination? And we, trust me, we want destinations as much, if not more, than you guys do. So, we measure this. We do a lot of analytics to find out where people are going, where they're underserved markets. For example, Orlando is an underserved market here. And don't think of Orlando as just people from Charlottesville going to Disney. It's people from Central Florida escaping the crush of tourism down there to come here. If you look at Asheville, for example, we look like Asheville and we look at Asheville. And they have really grown their tourism like crazy. In part because of Velo, or not Velo, but Allegiant took interest in Asheville and Asheville promoted that and was able to grow significantly. They are almost as many people coming to the mountains as are leaving the mountains and going to other destinations. Second home ownership, things like that, that they look at. So it brings a lot of people in. So much so that the community has kind of tried to turn off the spigot a little bit on tourism, if you go. So that gives you some ideas. So we talked to the airlines. It's not realistic for us to ask for a flight to San Francisco or LA. Maybe Denver. But what we want to do is go to other hubs. We want access to Dallas-Fort Worth because that's a jumping off point to the West Coast. Our runway is just not long enough. And extending the runway, last time we did it, 13 years ago, $60 million. That'd be a whole lot more than that now, and we can't really sink that kind of money into it. Especially, we probably need to extend it quite a bit further. So, but we want to fill in some of the gaps. So, one way to fill in the gaps is to reduce the leakage. So people within 30 miles of Cho Airport, if you're going to Los Angeles, almost 10,000 people who are going to LA who live within 30 miles of Cho chose to go to another airport. So a lot of cases they drove right past Cho, took the hour and a half long ride to Dulles, and hopped on a flight to get direct there. You can see the specific numbers. The numbers are almost irrelevant. It's just we got to get people to fill up the planes we have and demonstrate the demand. Then the airlines will give us a service. That's how it works. It's simple. It's simple from the airline's perspective. So, but I wanted to share with you that we have advanced analytics that will tell us this sort of crazy detail. So we also know where our customers come from. So this is a product called Placer, and it uses Big Brother cell phone data to figure out where you live. And these are people who flew out of show, all these dots. They represent a certain number of people, but you can see where the concentrations are. I can do the same thing the people who flew out of Richmond, who flew out of Dulles or Roanoke or any other airport. You can see there's a lot of people from Charlottesville going to those other cities. So you can do that sort of advanced analytics. We also share this data with folks like Paul from the TomTom and talk to him about what is attracted to, because we can look at the downtown mall. We can see what traffic is on a specific weekend. We can see the demographics of those. So we're happy to share that. We've worked with some of the vineyards before. They've asked us for the data. We'll be happy to share that with anybody that wants it. So just don't tell Blaze. They want to study. And it's not cheap, but it's valuable for the community and it's valuable to partner with folks. So the airport makes a lot of investments in infrastructure. It's just expensive to run airports. It's very expensive. So we did, you know, elevators, we're replacing our bag belts, that's going to be a nightmare. But we're going to replace their boilers. That's actually happening next week. Chiller's coming, we're renovating the fire station, a few other little things like that. But we have to prepare for the future. So when this building, cool model, I used to do those cool models way back when, we have to replace or update this building, because when they designed it, this was your plane. It was a Dash 8 turboprop. Flies in, can spin around, doesn't need a jet bridge. That's why you get the little quaint walk out on the ramp. That's what we have today. These are our CRJ or ERJ-175s. We call them baby Boeings. And that's what we're moving to. Airlines are no longer buying the small planes, only buying the larger airplanes. There's approximately 110 regional jets on order by the airlines. Most of them going to Piedmont Airlines, which flies regional jets for American Airlines. It's a subsidiary of American Airlines. There are over 8,000 single-aisle narrow-body aircraft on order. You don't have to be a mathematician to figure out which way the airlines are going in the future. And if you're not prepared for those, then the airport will not receive that kind of service. Well, they'll dwindle. So we have to get prepared for that. So on the horizon, we're doing a lot of facility planning studies right now. That rendering in the background is an actual rendering of something we're thinking about doing in the future. But the focus is going to be on safety. The airplanes today park too close to the taxiway, too close to the runway, so we have to push them out. Of course, we're on a postage stamp-sized mesa, so we have to figure out how to make all that work. Focus on efficiency. The airlines like an efficient facility where you can cross-utilize people. We've all been to the airport. We know that sometimes the person who checks you in at the gate may also load your bag or may check you in at the gate. You know, they do multiple jobs, so you have to create efficiency for that in the design. Future airport or aircraft compatibility. We also want a very inclusive and inviting terminal that meets all of the requirements of today, because they're different than they were back in 1991 or 1988 when the building was designed. So it's a much different environment now. We also run out of parking from time to time. That is the number one single largest source of revenue for the airport is parking. Who can guess how much we receive in taxes?
Zero.
Oh, exactly. So we have to pay our own way, and parking's how we do that. So anyone who says, well, why don't we have free? I have people that ask me why we don't have free parking. And I say, well, we don't have free firefighters. Oh, gosh.
Stop loving your machine for some reason.
I don't know what the deal is. Well, I'm almost done.
Okay.
So parking, corporate general aviation improvements, air traffic control facilities. We have one of the oldest air traffic control towers in the country. It's time to upgrade that. Yeah. We own the tower. The folks that staff it are under contract to the FAA. About half the control towers in the country are contract towers. It's a program the FAA put together 40 years ago, and it's been very successful. It's very cost effective for lower density airports. But again, we're one of the busier contract towers out there. Airports. You know, think about 120,000 operations per year. So it gets busy out there. So, and then support facilities. Let's see. I think that's about all I had, really. So, anyone have questions about how the sausage is made, or how the airport is? Because it's a challenging but very, very rewarding field to be in. Because when you all grow, then we're successful. If we can help you grow, if we can help fill up hotels, if we can help build attractions and attract people to come to us.
Amber, do you have a question?
Yeah, go ahead. Okay, I'm sorry. You got to watch my back.
No, you're fine. So, in some of the data that you displayed, as far as people, 30% of a lot of the population that would fly would go to other places. Are you able to see possibly why? Is it cheaper?
It's interesting you ask that. Well, I just commissioned a survey that we kind
of
have here.
And I was also late, if you covered that.
As to answer that question as to why.
Okay.
We want to know the why just as badly as you do. That way it informs our marketing and things like that. There's certain things we can control, certain things we can't control. People leak for a variety of reasons. What we seem to see is not price.
No.
Not in this community. In other communities, it's all about price, but not in this community. Because of our top 11 destinations that people leak to, only two of them are people going to Richmond. One, Fort Lauderdale, because you can go to Fort Lauderdale for $50 round trip. But you have to go on the third Sunday of a full moon. And you know, it's Spirit Airlines, so you know, you take your boxing gloves with you. But the other one is sort of a split between them. But most people are going to Dulles.
Mm-hmm.
They're paying more. They're paying as much as they would pay in Charlottesville because they want that direct flight.
Yeah.
They want that direct flight. They're afraid that, and the airlines have done this to themselves, they're afraid that there's going to be a disruption. Well, I'll tell you, out of CHO, 98.7% of flights fly. So the completion factor is very high. So people thinking, you know, maybe you had one experience or you had a friend that had one experience where your flight was canceled. That's very rare.
Mm-hmm.
They may have just, you know, maybe they had to go buy a lottery ticket. They just got lucky. So, other questions?
Emily?
Do you have a sense of, and whether this is, you know, knowing where folks are going, what they're doing versus just like, is it weekday versus weekend? But do you have a sense of like business versus leisure travel through the commercial side of the airport?
We believe it's somewhere around 60-40. We actually, next week's going to be a very busy week, so we're going to launch this survey, which is separate from this. It's a company called Drive Research that does this, and we're going to get a lot of details out of that. But the state is also coming into their economic impact study. They're going to be asking that question, are you flying on business, leisure, or leisure? We don't like that term. If anyone has a better idea, please tell us. But we believe it's about 60-40. And then also, there are more visitors in our passenger traffic, more visitors than there are locals.
Hmm.
Yes. We get more business from people who live elsewhere than the people who live here.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah. And we can get you more details on that if you're interested.
Brad?
You alluded to this in two different ways, the length of the runway and then also the need to upgrade for newer planes.
Mm-hmm.
So the length of the runway, was that limiting how far away those destinate? Like when you're talking about LA? And
we call it
like
stage
that?
Length. The stage length is defined or is controlled by the length of the runway. That's why you'll see 10,000 foot, 12,000, even 14,000 foot runways so that they can fly further.
But is that specifically bigger planes, or is that, you don't need to get into the details of that, but when you were saying that, like, we would have to upgrade our runway to be able to get to places like Denver or Dallas, or?
Not Dallas.
Okay.
Denver, LA, San Francisco. The corporate jets, the runway's long enough for them to get that far. In fact, you could go international, but we don't have customs, so. But don't think of the runway length and the size of the aircraft as mutually exclusive.
Okay.
They're loosely tied together, but the larger planes can be powered differently. Mm-hmm. They can actually use a 737 might actually use less runway than a regional jet.
Oh.
So
then you were talking about being able to accept those newer style larger planes?
And heavier planes.
Heavier, okay.
We have the runway length to do that. We need to strengthen some parts of the runway. We've had 767 flying, so very large airplanes. We have 757s on a regular basis, believe it or not. They're private airplanes, private 757. It's a world I don't live in, but they do. And they can fly long distances on those. It all depends on how much of a fuel load they carry. But a plane loaded, we have to work on a plane loaded with passengers. And so we can get a 737 in with a problem. But we don't have the terminal for that. Our gate rooms might hold 50 people rather than 180 people. And we don't have passenger boarding bridges. We have the ramps, very nice ramps that come from England. To load the airplanes, but that's not what people want. The experience at CHO, especially during foul weather, is just unpleasant. We want to upgrade that experience to be something at least comparable to modern airports. They're past your boarding bridge. It's also safer. So that's where we're headed.
Danny?
Yeah, you were saying that you have to create the demand in order to get the route. Which is kind of a catch-22.
Oh,
right?
It certainly is. I live in a world of catch-22s.
Right. And I was also thinking that the outreach doesn't really, it's not effective in that airport, but in other airports it would be. So I was wondering what kind of relationships you have with other, you know, airports where you'd like to get routes, or, you know, what the strategy
we do,
is.
We try to convince airlines sometimes we partner with DFW, for example. So DFW will talk to American. We'll talk to American. We both try and show the demand. And then what American's doing is weighing in. Okay, I've got a plane and a crew that's currently going from DFW to Boise. Okay, and it makes $2 million a year net or whatever. Or maybe it makes $100,000 a year net. So they have to calculate and trust that Charlottesville to to DFW is going to be more money, so I have to convince them of that.
Yeah.
So we do that. We take many communities partner with a chamber of commerce, business associates. If we had a business that really needed to go to Boston, we might take them with us to a meeting with the airlines to demonstrate to the airline that demand exists. The airlines can do all the analytics that we do. They can do every bit of the analytics. So what they always ask us is, what makes Charlottesville different? Why Charlottesville versus Boise? You know, so we have to tell that story. We have to tell that story that EVA's rocking it, or that the biotech is growing, or that the military is growing. They only buy 12,000 tickets a year, by the way. But, you know, it helps put it in perspective. So we have to demonstrate that demand, and we have to tell the story. So actually, next week, I will be meeting with American, Delta, United, Southwest, and several others where we can have those kinds of conversations.
Right. So it's not necessarily about,
and we meet with them several times a year.
Customer behavior more than demographic behavior, like stats.
They need people in the seat. They need to see people being in the seat.
Right. Because if you drive to Dallas and you fly to Denver, mm-hmm. at Dallas, well, then they count you out of Dallas as if you lived in Dallas. Right. They don't care about that you live in Charlottesville.
Right.
They don't care that you had demand. And they got you as a passenger.
The leakage being about the
non-direct right now
flight
is, about
is kind of an argument that could work in your favor if you frame it correctly. But, you know, they buy it.
Well, I tell them that there is some market demand. It's the market demand. It's there. It's for them to come and collect that market if they want to. I can show that, but they say, well, we only see this much demand, not this much demand.
Jennifer? Yeah. I was just kind of building on, I think, where you were headed. It sounds like this issue of the jet size has the airport headed towards a precipice. Like, what does that timeline look like where you anticipate or could project that we no longer are able to support the kind of jets that the airlines are using? Like, what's our crisis moment look like?
Well, it's going to be gradual. It's not going to be
in the way
all
most things are. Sure.
Like this. But I'll tell you, a lot of planes that serve the airport are 20 plus years old right now. So they're going to go into, they're going to go to the desert soon, relatively soon. Part of it will depend on how fast Boeing can deliver aircraft or Embraer. The Embraer aircraft are made in Brazil and then also made in Florida. If they can deliver those, that will occur. It's about being prepared when the opportunity strikes.
Sure.
And our goal is to be ready within 5 years.
Okay.
To be able to do that. It's not an easy decision. Terminal buildings cost upwards of $1,500 a square foot to build. They used to be. The last terminal that I built, I've built four terminals in my career. The last terminal I built was $356 a square foot. The market has just gone crazy. Any of you that are building know that. Know the construction costs are just nuts. And maybe they'll moderate. Asheville's building a new terminal building, spending $400 million. And they're getting it for about $1,000 a square foot. To give you a perspective. So.
I have a couple questions.
Absolutely.
You said 120,000 operations per year. That's 120,000 flights per year.
An operation is a landing or takeoff.
Okay. And you had mentioned that there's 360 flights daily, and 50 are, out of those, 50 are commercial. A lot of them are, you said, like FedEx and things
corporate,
like that.
Corporate, no. We don't have cargo here, but okay. They're corporate or general aviation, so it might be a private pilot, might be a student pilot,
right.
But a lot of them are corporate or
okay, but the 50 are commercial, like American Airlines, Delta, United, okay. And then you said, this is what I'm, 24 small jets, so that'd be 24 private jets?
What is
small,
that?
You said 24 small jets.
Okay.
How many? I guess I'm trying to find out how many. I've heard before from other members on the board that, or supervisors, that there are a lot of private planes, small private
There's
planes.
There's about 60 aircraft based at the airport. About 60. It varies. It goes up and down. They're based at the aircraft. They're paying taxes in Albemarle County.
Oh, I love that.
Yes. And a lot of them pay a lot of taxes. If you think about it, $1 million aircraft pays a lot of taxes, but it does zero drain on the services that the county provides. So it's ideal.
Ideal.
Mm-hmm. But on an average day, about 310 operations that take off or landing are attributed to general aviation or corporate aircraft. We occasionally get military, but not very often. So.
Okay. And wait, does that include commercial, like, or that's just corporate?
That's just corporate.
Okay. And then your plan, you said within 5 years, I know you had spoken to people about moving the terminal into the parking lot area. Perhaps,
okay.
Because you need to. This is what I heard. Okay.
Oh, we were at a meeting. We presented at the meeting.
Yes.
So I didn't want to get into all of it.
Okay.
I'm fine to talk about it. And anyone who's interested, I'll show you details about what we're talking about. Because at this point, it's a planning document. It hasn't even gone through environmental review yet. We're trying to figure out how to fund it. Things like that. We'll be happy to talk to you about that part of it.
Okay, Charlotte could help a lot.
Well,
you just own the revenue.
Yeah.
No.
Okay. But what
back
we will
up,
have
back
to
zero to
start.
What's that?
Zero.
From the city and county, zero. That's
for now, answer. But we can change that.
Okay.
And, okay. So think of it this way, Chris. You're making zero investment in your airport.
I'm just saying, there's
for every dollar that's available, there's $10 worth of need, and we understand that. We get that perspective. I worked for a county for the last 15 years in North Carolina, and I completely understand it. I was one of 28 departments, and everyone has a need, and they're all legitimate.
Right.
So, but from an airport perspective, it's an investment for the community. I mean, why else would you build an airport if it wasn't going to give you some sort of return? And that's what the airport does. It creates jobs and brings wealth into the community.
Well, I brought that up, moving the terminal. That's what I had heard, because you're saying that the runway was long enough. It just needed to be improved. But the runway was long enough. But the problem was that the terminal was too close.
Correct.
To the jets coming in, so that needed to be moved.
So right now, the airplanes push back onto the taxiway, onto an active taxiway, block the taxiway. So by moving the terminal building back, by moving the terminal building back, the airplanes will be able to push back onto the apron space and don't block the taxiway. Mm-hmm. It's a safety issue.
Okay.
It's 100% a safety issue. So what we would do, at least the current thinking is, we build a new processing building and a new concourse that is further away from the runway. We would continue to use the existing building for ground loading for the interim. But the new portion of the terminal building, which would feature all the jet bridges and nice concessions and hopefully a wine bar and all the other things, the other amenities that people want, would be built further away. We would also have to, we're running out of space, so we have to go vertical and park. People won't complain about that because the idea is that you can walk from your car into the terminal building and into the airplane without ever being in the elements. That's the goal. That's really the goal, is to do that. So so we would do that. But all of this is expected to come with a price tag of, you know, maybe $300 million. If we can get a lot of grants from the FAA, there's a certain amount that the airport can borrow as sustained debt for that. But there's still a little bit of a gap that we have to figure out how to solve that. So, Chris, do you have the big checks?
No, we don't have
any big checks.
If we get ours from
you
the county.
You have one. Oh, Jesus. We gave it to you.
No, but it's a community-wide thing.
Me too.
Communities are successful. Obviously, when they work together, we all know that.
Right.
I'll tell you a couple of real quick things about airports. We're heavily regulated. Mm-hmm. We're heavily regulated on how we spend our money, how we make our money, and so forth. I can't do destination marketing. It is against the law for me to do destination marketing. Can you believe that?
No.
I can partner, and I have for years partnered with DMOs to do that destination marketing, as long as it mentions something about flying. Yes, you're not getting it.
It's very upsetting.
Yeah, that's what you said about that. Yeah.
But so partnering is the way we can go about doing these things, and it's a win-win for everybody. Right. So we've worked with travel writers and all sorts of other creative things to get people. The airport's not the destination. We're just the means to get there. Right. But we can certainly open up markets and so forth. And we can do, we're going to work with UVA on some destination marketing. There's some ways that we can do that. And get creative. And then when we are working to get, you know, everyone wants us to get a low-cost carrier in here. We had Allegiant about a decade ago, and then we had Avelo a couple years ago. It didn't do well because this market's different. We know people don't want to fly on Thursday at 8 o'clock at night to go to Disney World. We get that. The community asked for us to pursue that. We did. We put some money behind it to try and encourage them to stay. But we filled up 125 seats on 186-seat aircraft on average. That wasn't profitable for Avelo, who needs like a 95% load factor in order to break even. But remember, every time we get one of those, we're also getting the influx of passengers from that destination city back here as well. So we're looking at two-way. So if we could fill 125 seats, but maybe Orlando could fill 20, and get people, 20, 30, 40 of them, get people from Orlando to come up here because we can offer something they don't have. So if we can get that, then that helps. So any other questions? And you can reach me at any time if you have an idea or a thought or just have a burning question or you want me to tell you what day to buy tickets. By the way, that doesn't work anymore.
So only the private jets pay taxes to the county.
Right, but that's not the only thing. You have over 500 people that work at the airport.
Right.
And they pay taxes as well. But
right.
You have improvements
right.
on
right.
facilities.
This directly relates to a question from the supervisor.
Right. Well, there is a question out there. We have one of the highest tax rates on aircraft in the state. We do in Albemarle County. And Manassas charges a dollar. That's it. A dollar. Not a dollar per, a dollar. And then Chesterfield also is almost free as well. Because they see those airplanes coming in and bring other benefits. They bring jobs into the community. And they because every time you base a larger aircraft, you create demand for a fueler or a mechanic or other things like that. So you're creating those jobs. And those jobs pay well. I was talking to someone today from Liberty, first year A&T mechanic, an airline mechanic, $90,000 a year for the first year, right out of college. So we like those jobs. So.
Other questions?
Okay. No. I can talk for days.
Yeah, I know.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you. Really appreciate it. Next on our agenda, we have on our consent agenda approval of previous meeting minutes.
So moved.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstain? Okay, we don't have to do a roll call, right?
No, we're good.
Okay.
We're all casual now.
The next item, financial statement, consent on the consent out.
We did the whole, the approval of the minutes and the financial statement.
I didn't state both.
Oh, you didn't state both.
I did not.
My bad.
Okay. So the do I have a motion to accept the on the consent calendar the financial statement?
Anyone?
All right.
Nobody second.
Okay. All in favor? Opposed? Abstain? Good. Thank you. Sorry, I'll put
mine
next step. Okay. Item 4, motion and discussion on website privacy policy.
All right. So the state code changed, and we took a look at what the requirements were for our website policy. It was pretty close to what we had already posted, but we needed to do a little bit of changing to keep up with current technology. But then something else that had changed was that the board needs to approve our website privacy policy. So we... It was, at least as long as I've been here, have never had the board do that. It doesn't seem like a normal board functionality, but it's part of what's in the state code, and that's why we're bringing it to you all. So I provided an updated version. Lauren and my marketing team and I were trying to make sure that whatever we had stated in this policy is correct with the technology that we're using to track what ends up coming to our website and how we store the data of whatever anybody might share with us on the website. I think rather than reading this through, I am happy to take any questions that you all have about anything that was stated in the policy or the intent of the policy or anything that you might have questions about.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Why would someone want to opt in or opt out using cookies?
So,
not just for this.
I think a lot of people opt out of using cookies because they don't want their data tracked throughout. They don't want their journey tracked throughout the internet, right? When people do allow us to use cookies and we are able to track their IP address on its journey, then we're able, as advertisers, to get at them more effectively. So if you really like online ads and in support of this board, I encourage you to like them. Then if you allow cookies, then we can make it more effective. Yeah.
Okay. Questions?
So this meets current best practice and all legal requirements?
Yes.
Move for approval.
Yeah. Yeah. Also looking at Lauren, she's also nodding.
Yeah. Yeah. So is this something you want us to?
If we can
a motion?
Make a motion for it, that would be much appreciated.
Okay. Second.
This is a roll. Is this a roll call one? Yes.
Do we need a second?
Do we need a second?
Do not. Okay.
But we do need a roll call.
Okay. All right. We have a motion from Chris Engel. Thank you.
Mr. Abadie.
Aye.
Carol. Brand new pen. Thank you, Chris. Ms. Branch.
Yay.
Yay. Okay. Ms. Copeland.
Yay.
Yay. Mr. Kronberg.
Yay.
Ms. Eastwood.
Yay.
Mr. Engel.
Yes.
Ms. Kilroy.
Yep.
Ms. Lupisto-Kirtley.
Aye.
Ms. Lyon.
Yes, and I know this took your team more time than it would seem here, and this looks really responsible.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Such and go there for a while. Jip.
Yes.
Thank you. Mr. Shea.
Yes.
Ms. Smith.
Yay, yay.
Mr. Yule.
Yes.
That's why it's not here. Ms. Wagon.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
I thank you all for second that. We can second that. Appreciate your work on going through that and looking through all of that.
Thank you. We can sign that at your leisure.
Okay.
I appreciate it.
Next, we have discussion on FY 2026 budget.
All right, so it is largely unchanged from when I presented it in February. We had made some slight adjustments based on what the county audit numbers and everything were when they got back to us on a couple of those things, but we did include the additional health insurance, so that is line two here of the $29,000. So as a reminder, we were doing an infusion into the county's health insurance account that was proportionate to the number of staff that we have on our team, and that is supposed to be something that is there for all county employees to be able to utilize, and as a partner agency that uses the county as a fiscal agent, that is our responsibility as well. Did anyone have any questions about how we divided up this budget or any thoughts on the spend for FY 2026? Thank you.
Thrilled to see that you got a lot. Could be more to work with for advertising and marketing, though. That tracks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Any other questions? Concerns? Okay. So,
can we make a motion to approve the budget?
I move to approve the budget.
Okay. Is that a roll call, Lauren?
No.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So, abstain? Okay.
So moved.
Perfect.
Amber, did you have a question? I saw your hand go up.
No.
Okay.
No, I don't.
Okay. You're good.
All right. Next, we have director's report.
All right. That's me. So, highlights. We submitted an operations plan. I don't call it an annual report because it's not a glossy, shiny document, but it is an almost 20-page document that describes to the city and the county what we did last year, and how we used our budget and how we propose to use it in the new year. For the first time this year, City Council voted to accept the plan, so that was a formal procedure that was new to me, but I was excited to see it. We hosted our annual Tourism for All conference. We'll get into that in a little bit. Our Drive Plus workshop. We are working on some planning meetings for the Downtown Mall 50th, which is also at the same time as the VA 250th, so coming up in 2026. We had a staff retreat that we led as our leadership team called Collaboration Day, where we sat down and we went through our plans for the strategic plan and how we want to have that be successful and finding ways to increase how we work together. We have been able to move the PVCC curriculum forward. We got an email today that they have gotten approval from the state, which is exciting. And so this is hospitality training that would be available through PVCC. And we've been working with our local accommodations, but also some just outside of the local area, like Wintergreen, to ensure that we have some interest there and students who might be able to participate. So we're excited about that. And then on Friday, we'll have a meeting with the city and the county public schools and PVCC to see how we can track that workforce journey for somebody who is in high school all the way through to being a successful career person at one of our accommodations. We were able to participate in a regional crisis communications meeting that the city called. The county was present, UVA, many and most of the local major government organizations that you would expect to be present in the room during a crisis communication crisis. We're there. I think it's a really good step forward. We're all getting into a similar system so that we'll be able to share information and our crisis communications plans with each other. We also, as a reminder for our year one of our strategic plan, we have wrapping up and finalizing a crisis communications plan of our own. So that's something that we're able to act on. We have a draft of that right now, but we want to have it to be at a place where it's a little bit more sophisticated than we have at the moment.
Who led that meeting?
Afton Schneider from the county, from the city. She's the public information officer. Yeah. We have had a lot of county financial management system training in the past couple. Well, it's just been this month. It's felt like. it's taken up a good portion of my time. Kathy, who's our financial person on our team, and it is taking up some of the time of the rest of some of the other folks on my team. But they launched their new management system April 1st, which was not funny, but I thought it might be. it's great. I think it's going to end up being a really good thing that's streamlined into one system for in large parts. We don't have systems trying to talk to each other anymore. So I am relieved.
Modernization.
Sorry?
Modernization.
Yes. Yes. It's nice to be able to pull the budget from the same place where you are doing the inputting all the expenses.
Tell me, and Courtney, what was it like before?
We had three different systems, one to pull the budget, one to do the credit card reconciliation, and another to do the purchase order reconciliation.
The county's been working for several years to modernize all our computer systems, operational systems, because the board has asked for permits to be processed a lot faster. And just to let you know, when I first joined the board, our computers were 20 years old. We had employees saying, can I bring my computer because it's more updated than what you have. Mm-hmm. So it's a big modernization coming now to fruition.
Is this going to help you get POs through faster? For
yes, that's the hope.
Yeah.
It has gotten progressively better. I think as we've, this has been part of that, but also as we have tried to figure out how we're spending the money in the beginning of part of the fiscal year. We've been onboarding vendors at the very beginning of the fiscal year in anticipation of using their services throughout the fiscal year. That way we're not waiting on the onboarding. That might slow things down. Yeah, good question. Some of us attended the VA DMO conference. We were also at the reflaying for Monticello for Thomas Jefferson's birthday and the Beacon Kitchen opening. Coming soon, and also I forgot to put on our schedule to talk about our next board meeting, so maybe we should do that at the coming soon slide, if that's okay.
Sure.
We will be hiring a new director of public relations and marketing. I think our soon-to-be former director left the room for this announcement. but Brantley's been with us for 5 years. Yeah. He's done a really excellent job. We're very grateful to have had him for as long as we have. He's making a career change. So we're talking about you.
Round of applause for your hard work. Something that that I will be working on in the meantime, and hopefully a new director soon will be working on, will be the onboarding of our marketing agency for the rebrand. We have selected that agency. The contract hasn't quite been finalized, but we're really darn close. So we should have that in the next week or so. We've also been trying to finalize the metrics for tracking the strategic plan and how that works with our personal goals. So trying to make sure that we create a framework that leads to the success of the plan, but also to the individual success of everybody on our team. We had our initial meeting on the bylaws update, so thank you, Emily and Andrea, for getting us started on that. And then we had several email exchanges from Brad and Olivia about some industry speakers for the upcoming board meetings. I did not schedule anyone to speak at the June board meeting because we're not sure when we're going to have the June board meeting. So I will pull up a calendar if I can find.
While you're doing that, Bradley, tell us which wild world career change you're going into.
Sure.
For the people that don't know.
Yeah, so some of you may or may not know, I am going to be a public servant in a little bit of a different way, and I am following a passion of mine that I've had for a really long time and getting into education. So I will be a teacher. Yes.
Thank you.
God bless them.
Yes, that's right.
So I will be a STEM teacher for an elementary school, which also aligns with just what I'm really passionate about. Not that I haven't been passionate about this for the better part of a decade, but it's going to allow me to give back in a very different way, and in a way that I think is going to be exceptionally meaningful to me and the community as well.
What grade level?
K through 5. I've got them all.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So from the littlest one up to about 10 years old.
Yeah. I did 3 through 6. Yeah. I couldn't do the little ones.
it's a whole different ballgame.
Which school?
Up in Green, Rutgersville Elementary. Right. Yeah. So I'll be staying here in Charlottesville, so you'll be seeing me around, of course. But just excited for a new adventure, and I don't know if I'm supposed to say it, but having summer's off is going to be kind of nice.
He can't make eye contact with me right now, so he's safe.
To Courtney and Sue Park. But obviously it's very bittersweet, and I've really enjoyed my time here and all the different capacities that I've served. So.
We really appreciate what you've done. Yeah, congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Can I come talk to your client?
Yeah,
I'll just do some
if you ever want to move to Avamore Public Schools.
I know where to reach it. Yeah.
Got it.
All right, so June. The 23rd is what we originally had on our schedule. Our esteemed chair and vice chair both unable to make the meeting on the 23rd. And that is my review. So that's not necessarily ideal. I am out of the country starting June 6th and returning on June 17th because my board meeting was scheduled for the 23rd. So our options are we could try for Monday, June 2nd. We could do the 16th without me, or the 9th, I guess. But we had talked about the 16th without me, but with B and Russ. Or we could do the 23rd without B and Russ, but with me. So, lots of great options for June.
Pick your poison.
What are our...
Yeah.
If you also want to stay with my parents and extended family on vacation, I help yourself.
So if we go with the 16th, you're not here, and that is your review, right? We would be in closed session anyway.
You would be, and I don't attend the closed session for my review, so.
But it'll be your event.
Right, and Russ and I would be going over the evaluation of Courtney prior to that. Actually, we're meeting on the 2nd, and then we want to get everyone's input on the 16th. So,
So there wouldn't be a director's report and presentation. Right. We would keep, we would send you a document showcasing what we had done as opposed to presenting it to you all, because my presenter, who would have been my default, will not be here anymore, Brantley. So that's, you'll just get a little report. You'll have a closed session. It'll
probably
be a quick
meeting.
I say 16. For some reason, it's on my calendar.
I asked about it.
We brought it up before. What do y'all think?
We'll be out of control, though.
I'm game.
I mean, you're going to have to control yourself.
Do you three have a preference between those two options?
Yeah. Okay.
Well, since we're doing the review, I think it's important that Russ and I are here, and we can give Courtney the bad news afterwards.
But do you have a strong opinion on 2 versus 16?
No. The 2nd, the 9th, the 16th, I'm here.
9th, I'm not here, but 2nd or the 16th.
Here. Okay. 2nd or the 16th.
The 16th.
Let's
just go with the
16th.
Yeah,
16th.
All right.
16th.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. I won't be there, but that's totally fine.
You won't be there.
I won't be there.
And you'll have the opportunity to give your feedback about my performance in advance of that, because we'll meet on the 2nd to talk about it, and then you all will have a meeting.
Right. And then if you don't respond, I will gently remind you and keep reminding you until I show up at your front door and you know you can respond. No problem.
And 1 to 3, right?
Yeah.
Yes, on the 16th, 1 to 3.
Yeah.
Probably. Hold 1 to 3. Hopefully it's 2.
1 to 2.
1 to 2.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
All right, so Chris will send an update to that. Chris will send you an updated one, and then we'll have somebody from our team watching the space to ensure that, but we probably won't have anyone else because this room is not actually private for a conversation throughout the entire office. So if you only see one member of my staff here that day, it's out of respect for the closed session.
If we close that door?
It does nothing.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay, well, whisper. We will whisper.
Yeah, right, you guys.
Yeah.
Can you make a motion to change the date of the meeting?
Yeah, so I'd like to make do we have a motion to change the date to June 16th from 1 to 3? Okay, we have a motion. We don't need a 2nd. We don't need a roll call.
Good.
In favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstain. Good. Thank you.
Perfect. Thank you, guys. All right. Our hotel occupancy rates, not doing as well in 2025. So far this year, we haven't gotten into our peak demand portion of the year, which will start in April, but not necessarily great, off to a great start. Our average daily rate is higher than it has been before as well. So that combination ends up having a middle of the road overall revenue per available room. Our top market is DC. With economic uncertainty in DC, we're likely to continue to face a slide in people visiting. I don't have strong numbers on that. We do see that international visitation is down quite a bit. I was on a call at noon with my counterparts from all over the country, and things are looking soft and not necessarily heading in a very strong direction. But we will keep, you know, trying to do what we can here. Just for awareness, we're down almost 1% year over year for March and down 1% year to date, so not a huge amount for RevPAR, but something to keep an eye on. I was also curious how much our average daily rate had gone up compared to the rest of Virginia. And so for hours from 2019 to 2024, it went up 32%. But for Virginia overall, it went up 17%. Mm-hmm. So our average daily rate is going a lot faster. We do have some higher end properties that also would be a reason why we might see that. Mm-hmm. But just to put a little bit of perspective on that, anything that the accommodations folks want to add to that?
No, I mean, I'm seeing it. It's softer, but I mean, Francois is killing it at the draftsman, so I don't know.
So far, but I mean, again, June and July look extremely
June strong. Looks terrible.
We're pacing like way behind.
Yeah.
I mean, like scary levels. So, yeah.
Is there anything we can do on the marketing side since, you know, D.C. is kind of imploding and, you know, can we, like, market ourselves of, okay, you don't have the money to go overseas because you don't have a job, but, you know, come but, you know, but come here to Albemarle, to Charlottesville, because there's a lot here and it won't cost as much, and, I mean, something like that.
I think
not word it like that.
Thank you. I think what we would do probably instead is lean into more of our secondary markets and spend less money in the D.C. market and more money in Charlotte or Baltimore or Virginia Beach.
Baltimore is really good. Keswick did a big Baltimore thing, and the guests that took advantage of it were shocked it was only 3 hours. So I was like, you went through, you don't realize we're just 3 hours. So
yeah.
And we saw an uptick by tracing the zip codes from that marketing campaign.
Yeah. Okay. But it's something we'll have to kind of start in a couple of months because we end up planning all of these things months in advance.
Right.
And I know it's on a slide in a minute, but like Fox 5 was here last week from the D.C. area filming on site with a bunch of folks, and that's obviously the D.C. market. So
right.
Some of these things, it's not as easy to just turn off and turn on in different markets, but we can head that way.
Are you all familiar? I heard a report that in the wedding industry, Albemarle, and I can't remember the other destination, or Albemarle is second on the East Coast for weddings. Was it New York that was one?
Charleston.
Close, Charleston.
Charleston. Okay. So, we got that going for us.
We do. As long as those UVA grads keep making money and getting married, we should be in good shape. So here are our marketing PR efforts for February and March. A lot of this has been building up to having the rebrand start. We have made some pretty substantial changes. I know it says like major updates to the meetings and group page. Sounds like, oh, well, you just change the page on your website. Like, we're doing a whole lot of research to figure out which venues can support how many people and what that looks like. And so when we're, this is like a whole team effort in large part to make sure that the information that we have on our website is usable for our planners and accurate to what we have right now. Our partner portal, we'll be starting to put more of our emphasis there, trying to make sure that our partners are aware of their listings on our website and keeping those up to date. When they don't look great, then people leave our website. So we want them to really lean into that and have it be something that's robust and keeps them engaged as they go through our website. I think that's... those are major highlights on there. I have two different charts on this. You would have seen in advance, so I'm going to move to the second chart, but if we need the money numbers, on I have both versions of this. So I think it was Russ who had a question last time about how we break down our budget and what that looks like. I will say that our promotional items budget and our photography and videography are larger than they usually would be in anticipation of a rebrand. So if we get a new logo, then we would need to have new logos on everything that we're doing. So in anticipation of that, we would have different things that we might need, different elements of advertising to prepare for. Anything that we don't spend in any of the categories that's not advertising goes to advertising. So it is always the default bucket that we put everything back into. But this is basically how our advertising line item breaks down, so that little over $1 million. All right. Here are some content highlights. I'm getting things out for things to do. I know the Ultimate Spring Bucket List and our seasonal bucket list always do really, really well. They seem to get crawled by the search engines, so that's exciting. And so a lot of getting outside, specifically in the spring. And the PR efforts.
Let's go back.
Yeah.
21 numbers. Oh, on the Governor's Club. Okay, because I know there's like 44 wineries, but that's for the Gold Cup.
That's for the Gold Medal Trail.
The Gold Medal Trail
does really seem to work. So we talked to the Virginia Wine Marketing Office. Our wine trail, when we had it here from like a passport standpoint, wasn't something that people took advantage of, but it does seem to work for the Gold Medal. I think that's because people are already really bought into Virginia wine and they want to see what's new and what won. Athena, do you have any thoughts on that? Not to pick on you.
I know a lot of money and effort goes into that for sure. So I think it makes sense. Of course, there's a lot of wineries in the region. There are a number who maybe by some freak did not get a gold medal this year, and there's still places that people want to visit. That's something to kind of keep in mind. I think I looked at this, what you did. You also link it to the Monticello Wine Trail. So that's good. So then you get everybody.
Yeah. It's just something, that's an answer to whatever content is being pushed out by the Virginia Wine Marketing Office so that we have something to answer that demand with. Okay, and recent PR efforts. Just ample. there's a whole lot of press coverage that we've gotten recently, so that's really exciting. I guess I'll point out here that we both have both the group tour coverage as well as the leisure tour coverage. So like the small market meetings and leisure group travel, that's group business, and that would be the efforts that Teresa works on specifically, and then the rest of the coverage is for our leisure market.
How's he plan a sober, curious trip to wine country? Interesting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We do have a couple of options for that, and that is something that the younger folks really are leaning into, is non-alcoholic drinks that seem like they might be alcoholic. So non-alcoholic wine and non-alcoholic beer and, you know,
the mocktail.
Yeah.
Are they like under 10 or something?
I think it's the Gen Xers or Gen Zers.
Yeah, it's fine. It helps with January. Like for us, and what I've seen in our industry, there's some curiosity among wineries considering making some of those products, but the technology, actually Wine and Beer Supply may be investing in some technology to help wineries to create some of these products, but either way, whether or not it's a business, you know, whether or not it's a market that really makes sense for a winery to go into, I do think those options in January we saw really help. Mm-hmm. So I think some of that can be really helpful for particularly in dry January, when people are looking for options where they can get non-alcoholic beers and some non-alcoholic wines. And even if you don't make it, you can have them available. Mm-hmm. You guys have some, but you have non-alcoholic options.
Not that we make, but we carry some.
Right,
yeah.
Which seems like it's kind of what makes the most sense. But, yeah.
It's a small percentage, but it certainly at least gives you the perception that you have those choices.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I've heard of non-alcoholic beer, but there's non-alcoholic wine.
Yeah. They're not as good, you know. But
which is why I haven't heard of them.
We stopped the Wolfer Estate sparkling because it actually tastes good and people seem to really like it. And, you know, women come in who are pregnant and may not want to be drinking. We do a lot of baby showers, and we sell a lot of Wolfer Estate sparkling.
I've had two weddings that had non-alcoholic wine this year. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well,
to get it from
Wagman.
Yeah.
From
Wagman.
Did you get
Wolfer's?
I don't know what it was, but
that
was the only place I could get it.
The NA beer market is definitely building too. There are a lot more options out there.
Right.
Yeah. And I also think, like in a vineyard, you know, the experience of going, a pastoral kind of experience, doesn't necessarily have to go hand in hand with getting tanked.
Plus, we're trying to attract families, and so it may be that one member of that family needs another option, and so they can still all come.
Yeah, that's true. So.
Yeah, I don't drink, and I'm still like visiting wineries.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun. There's more like a third space now, I feel like.
Mm-hmm. I mean, on the other hand, all the breweries are coming up with canned cocktails with spirits, too. So.
that are pretty potent.
That's right.
Our sales efforts, Teresa, as usual, has been lots of places. Probably the biggest development here, in addition to the 20 RFPs and contributes to it, is we have finally been able to integrate a higher subscription with Cvent into our platform. So we are getting more RFPs than we have gotten requests for proposals for business than we've gotten before. It also allows us to track what our hotels are declining, as well as accepting. So that will help us in attracting business, but also to do the midweek study, ultimately. So that's one thing that we've implemented. The economic impact calculator is another, and we'll be, Teresa and I have both been learning. It's been a busy 2 months for learning for me. On how to really utilize that. And then we're close to being able to have access to AirDNA, which is the Airbnb short-term rental tracking software. And we ask for that for daily, so that we'll be able to see the patterns of that. We have a data science intern who's just graduated with a degree in data science who we're going to see what they know. And see if we can't get them to analyze some of that data and start with those projects to see what we can get from somebody who has that background. It sounds like those large data sets is what they usually work with, and so it should be relatively straightforward. But I've never done it before, so I don't really know. So fingers crossed.
What did you learn at the Doyle Hotel? I'm just curious. It's been kind of crickets over there, and I've heard ups and downs, and so I'm just more curious.
So,
since they've kind of rebranded,
more of a visit,
right?
I think we all kind of went. But I think they have some. It's new. I think it's new as far as that you let yourself up the elevator and a lot. All of us were there. Not all of us. I mean, you were. It was. It's very lack of staff. They say they're doing okay, but I do think The inside looks the same, pretty much. They took some of the...
It's all white now. It's a hospital.
Yeah. They took all of it. But they have plans to change that, sort of add more artwork back in and stuff. But they mentioned that they were doing well. Not well, the same as everybody. I think they're... Like I said, for me, it's different that you let yourself up and everything's done by code. I would want to somebody wait on me.
Yeah, it's like an interesting
concept
with it's a hotel meets Airbnb kind of thing, right?
I think they just opened a bookstore inside also.
That's what they were talking to us about, but I didn't know if that had come yet. Did they want to
get open last week?
Okay.
And upstairs is the rooftop is managed by. There's a food company that's...
Yeah, it's a branch off of Ruth's Chris, I think.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
Corey?
Just for the record, it was actually State of the Community for the meeting in February.
Oh, yes, sure enough. Thank you. My mistake. It's coming up, yes.
I'll be at that. Thank you. So the next time, copy paste that over.
Thank you, Andrea.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. All right. Our visitor services update. Our mobile visitor center, we have been able to increase our reach, which is great. We hadn't gotten too far along in this process, but what I'm really excited about is that we are able to continue to expand our special event attendance, and we're getting more and more invitations. Within the past three business days, we've had three invitations to go to go off-site to different locations. They are all during civic season. So Monticello is the first one, and we have committed to doing whatever days Monticello will have us for their extended civic season from Juneteenth until Independence Day. But we have the opportunity to go to the Blue Ridge Outdoors 30th anniversary of their publication in Nelson County. We got an invitation this morning to go to Hampton, Virginia on the 4th of July for their 4th of July event. So I'm excited to see when they're not all happening in the exact same moment, how we can get out there and really have our presence known in a different kind of sales capacity.
Question, yes. Can you remind us what the locations are and the schedule is for that? I mean, I imagine over the last 2 weeks you've been pretty busy with that, right?
Yeah. Cassie, do you want to take that?
So we are out, just as a reminder to everyone, the season runs mid-March to mid-December. That's because those are the warmer, more pleasurable days to be out with the van. And during those months, we run Wednesday to Sunday. Per our agreement, we operate at 5 county locations and 5 city locations, and that full schedule is on our website, visitcharlottesville.org. I believe you get to it from the homepage. Yes, but I'm shaking his head. But we are on the downtown mall, we are at the dairy market, we've got Mickey Tavern, King Family, the Van River Company. I'm not going to go through all of them because the schedule's online, but we do also have a shift here, a space here, where we're able to welcome visitors, which has been really useful, particularly just in the bad weather and things like that.
Were you at Foxfield over the weekend?
We were not. At this past one, we'll go to the fall one. Our next big event will be the Crozet Arts and Craft Festival, which will be just right there around Mother's Day, not this weekend.
And you were at the Tom Tom Festival?
We were not at the Tom Tom Festival. We have had prior meetings with that group, and the way that they have sought out our help is not through visitor information, through tasks that I don't think we could have done as county employees, but we still, you know, help answer questions about the Tom Tom Festival, and we've been on the downtown mall for our regular shifts around that time of the event.
Back Fridays after 5, there's a presence too.
We are on the downtown mall on Friday, but we try and maintain a regular time frame. So we are mostly out from 11 to 3. When I first started in 2021, I did a big analyzation of the hours that we were out to see what pulled the most, and 11 to 3 was a good time slot. There are always going to be those special events that are after hours or unique hours that we'll try and go to.
Okay. I just want to make sure that we are targeting, like, when we have travelers and visitors, especially Tonto Festival, Foxfield, the concert nights, things like that. I think it would be in the best interest to certainly have a presence out there.
I have not seen Tom Tom Festival numbers about hotel stays. Mm-hmm. Do we have any numbers? Because when I've talked to, like, when we've had event sponsorship applications in the past, I would have hoteliers and folks around the room, a committee that would look at it, and they would say, no one from Tom Tom stays at my property. We don't have overnight visitation for Tom Tom. Tom Tom is a strong activation of the downtown mall and very vibrant for people who are coming through who happen to be visitors, but I'm not seeing that translate into overnight stays. So I'm open to hearing from anybody who has that data so that we could reevaluate that. We do get asked about our relationship with Tom Tom, but those are numbers I've never seen and I've asked for.
What about Foxfield?
Foxfield, I think we have some UVA folks who come back for it. We choose the fall one instead of the spring one because the fall one's the family-friendly one. At a certain point with some events, you're not serving people at a certain point who've been overserved.
Yeah. I would say the same for Fridays after 5, but that's the community. But the bigger, you know, touring acts.
Yeah, the bigger touring acts, I would be interested in how we could do that, because if they're at JPJ, how are we getting access to that space to serve those folks? JPJ is always such an interesting one, too, because they want to have concerts in the spring and the fall when we don't need more programming, but they can't do it during basketball season, which is when we'd love to have them have the concert, so it's this... Mm-hmm. We're in conflict with the schedules on how we can really help each other. Right. So sometimes they're having these major concerts and people are
spending the night as far away as Richmond and Harrisonburg and Culpeper, and they'll go, well, get us hotel rooms. And we're like, well, we can't. Mm-hmm. An October, you know, weekend. So trying to keep working with them on how we can schedule things that are mutually beneficial. I know that the Sunday concerts and the Thursday concerts have really helped because that extends it into the weekend. It might also be a good day in the concert schedule to not have a Friday or Saturday night. It could be a Friday, Saturday night in a bigger market and then come here on an off day.
You never know, though. And the Pavilion, I think, for sure, there are opportunities there we should look into.
Yeah, and we have partnered with the Pavilion with Discover Black Seville specifically on having activation there during concerts where that made sense, but we haven't done it for all the major concerts. But it's something we can look into. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anything else? Cool. All right. Brochure distribution. We're still making brochures. People still want them. That's something else that we'll plan on our new marketing agency giving a little bit of an overhaul to and a slimming down of that we have right now. But just for some fun facts of the top requesting cities and states to get an idea of who is planning on coming here. Obviously, if you're requesting a visitor guide in advance, it helps us know who's planning and how long that planning window might be. Most of these are going to be for, like, my wedding's going to be here. I want little gift bags and I want some visitor information. We stuff those and ship them off so that they can distribute those to their guests when they get here, or we deliver it to the hotel where they're staying. We have been working internally a lot to create content that's based on the needs that our visitor services team identifies. So frequently asked questions and things that they can identify, they're able to take back to our marketing team and go, hey, we really need to create some content around it. Or if you're Ethan and you have like a really, really specific interest in pizza, which he does, if you ever need to know all of the different kinds of pizza we have here and how they rate on his scale, it is very scientific. That is something that they have been working on. They're really helping us create content there. Our destination development team, we have really focused on, since we don't currently have any grants, going after grants successfully and making sure that for our partners we give them the tools in order to get the grants successfully. So some of that has been through the 250th and some of that has been through other grants through Virginia Tourism Corporation, and also helping stay on track as those grants change over time so that we're able to inform our partners and stay up to date. I mentioned the partner portal and the engagement that we want to have there. That also allows our partners to see how they're mentioned on our website, how they're mentioned in social media, so that they're able to see how we're engaging with their organization over time. And really, it also allows us, if somebody's like, hey, we haven't seen something in 6 months from you all, how can we get on the content calendar, making sure that we keep that conversation open to make sure that we're promoting our partners equitably.
Courtney, can I just add something? Yes. Think of the partner portal as becoming the one-stop shop for partner resources that the CACB offers, but it is in production, so it is a staged project. So right now we are focusing on elements around destination development, which do include things like your special event listing, your own business listing, research, trainings. And then we're hoping to wrap that up by the end of this fiscal year, so June 30th, with the marketing element coming in next fiscal year. So I heard Courtney say media mentions. I didn't want you all to go log on all of a sudden and be like, where are the media mentions?
But yeah.
Just so you know that it's a we've got it in the project scope, that's a staged thing.
Thank you, Cassie.
Yep.
Our Tourism for All conference went even better than last year, not because Anonymous said so, but it actually did, which was really exciting. We got some ideas of how we can improve it for the future and iterate it so that it's not feeling like it's the same content every year. So we're really excited about that. I think I have a lot of images of Francois, so if you want to say anything about the conference. Good, thank you. And thank you for being our you know, our star through many of the images. Well, next time we'll have to make sure we're...
Like an incident on ground that day that I had to sneak away for.
Yes. It was a busy day.
That day, and I think the week after, there was like multiple emergency, like shelter in place things.
There was a lot of sheltering that week.
Yeah. So we did briefly pause the conference to let people stay up to date on that. But otherwise, really, really positive day. Senior Stay Day was something that we did in coordination with ACPS, the Equity Center, PVCC, and UVA's Pipelines and Pathways. In the morning, our team welcomed high school students who were interested in a variety of different careers, but we made sure the hospitality industry was represented. And then the afternoon, it was community members. So it was very efficient for people who wanted to participate. They only had to set up for one day. They could serve students and adults who were interested in careers, which was exciting. And that is all I have.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate that.
Of course.
Any public comments? Members of the public? Mm-hmm. Anybody? Okay. Board announcements. Okay.
You made of our own organizations?
Yes. Well, anything you want, really.
Okay.
Go ahead. Go for it.
Well, State of the Chamber is this Thursday at Hillsdale Conference Center, 11:30 to 1:30.
There's one ticket left, and I applied for that, but I think others did too, so we'll see who gets to go for the BOS.
I got everyone. You're all in.
I'm in?
Everyone's in.
Oh! I'll be there. Anyone else?
May is bike month, so there's a lot going on with lots of bike rides, events, races, and all kinds of things going on next month as well. So
okay.
I think some of it is on the calendar.
We're hosting the NCAA D1, or one of a few women's regional golf tournaments this upcoming weekend.
Nice.
Which is pretty sweet.
Yeah.
Home field advantage for our team. Hopefully they get out of the regionals. And then I think tennis is, in both men and women, are in regionals as well. Hoping to possibly host super regionals the following weekend, I guess, Mother's Day weekend.
Any other announcements?
Courtney gestured towards us. We have a very robust slate of programming for civic season at Monticello, and just want to highlight that Ken Burns is our keynote speaker at July 4th this year. There will also be a panel discussion. Tickets are $10 with Ken Burns and his co-directors of his next series that comes out in the fall about the American Revolution. The first 7 p.m. showing sold out, so this is not yet live, but we will have a second panel at 3 p.m. on July 3rd, so if you'd like to see Ken Burns and see clips from his new series, it's going to be pretty cool, I think.
Oh, yeah.
I have my tickets for that.
Perfect.
I'm very excited about
there
it.
You
know,
it's
going
to be cool.
Can I ask
a question?
Of course. The second time I've heard the term civic season. Can somebody?
It's the season from Juneteenth to Independence Day. Hmm. So celebrating those 2 weeks.
This is a national
thing. I'm not the only one.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you, Chris.
So this just came out.
Do you want me to do this?
The latest and greatest.
Okay, so Civic Season is an initiative started by an organization called Made by Us. It's a consortium of civic-focused organizations, museum, cultural sites. The idea is to get people involved and more civically engaged. There's an effort, especially with Made by Us and Civic Season, to reach younger audiences. And so this is taking different forms at different sites around the country. We're doing a whole lot at Thomas Jefferson's Monticello. So we have a lot of things that we're offering. We're launching a new tour. We have, obviously, Independence Day, Juneteenth stuff. And so it is something that museums are talking a lot about. I think it's just going to take a little bit longer for it to catch on in a more public-facing way.
When did this start? When the whole civic season?
I think it's probably, I think this maybe is like year four.
Oh, okay, so it's new.
Newish.
Okay. No, good. Thanks for asking, Chris.
Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Anyone else?
I've had lots of different emails from various folks, some of you in this room, about when the guest house is actually going to open. I'm not putting this in the concrete yet, but it will likely be the end of January 2026. So, somewhere in that ballpark.
You want to explain the guest house?
Virginia Guest House, the hotel.
Okay.
And conference center. It's okay, B. the big hotel, the big conference
Chris
center.
Chris can ask, why can't I ask?
Russ, did you see permit delays from the county?
No.
City.
Oh,
sorry.
Yeah, because if you apply to the county, that'll be a hard no.
It's going to throw off a lot of tax revenue
for
the city.
Oh,
it's great. We got to pay the airport.
You have 20 million you could contribute, you know, revenue sharing.
Oh, we're not going to do this again.
Yeah, uh-huh, you can contribute,
you know,
that. Yeah.
The city would be up at the airport if it weren't for that 20 million.
That's true.
Everybody take a breath.
This must be fun.
That was a voluntary agreement in 1983 that goes to perpetuity.
I understand that. Part. Boy, do I understand that. Yes. But that's okay. We do it.
We do it.
Okay, we do it because it's in perpetuity. So we can find a judge to change it. But anyway.
The next slide is adjournment.
Pardon? Anyone else? Just want to make sure. Anyone else? Okay. So we stand adjourned until June 16th at 1 o'clock. Good morning, everyone.